Welcome to the Sigma update. I'm QX, and how you doing, CW?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. Been another crazy week in crypto, as always. A lot of things going on behind the scenes in sort of the macro environment. But here in Ergo, everything's sort of humming along nicely with a lot of things going on in the ecosystem.
It does. It does feel like we're in a little bubble where we're working hard with our heads down and sometimes up. But yeah, and then you look up at other places and you're like, oh, what's going on there? Oops.
kind of thing. Yeah, exactly. It's fantastic to see that that we've got that sort of engagement through the community, through the dev community, the marketing side of things. Everyone's sort of here building, helping and everything like that. So yeah, fantastic engagement there on the community front.
If you've noticed that we look a little different right now, it's because we have switched time zones and or switched timing. CW is now late at night and it's 6:30 a.m. here. So that's why I look like I just got hit by a truck.
You just crawled out of bed and I'm hoping to try and get in bed.
Perfect. We'll see if this is any different from the other episodes when it's the opposite way. So we got a short one for you today as far as updates go, because we're going to pull the Dan interview that we did a couple weeks ago, which is a really nice, interesting life story of Dan, the life of Dan, I guess we could call it, from the infancy of Dan up until right now.
Yeah, it's a great introduction for anyone who hasn't or doesn't know Dan on that sort of personal level. It's a great introduction. And he's, like you mentioned, he runs through his life story and ultimately from childhood all the way through how he ended up into crypto and specifically here at Ergo.
Fantastic. All right, let's dive into the couple categories we have today. The first thing we're going to talk about is the SigmaNaut program. And we're going to pump out a blog article in a little bit to talk about our voting procedure that we just did last week. But how it generally works is we started out with, to become a SigCan or a SigmaNaut, we started out with a voting procedure where if you submit your vote, the voting gets happened over 8 days. And at the end of those 8 days, the system automatically tallies it and sends a message to our Discord, whether you've passed, failed, or that kind of thing. So with the engagements of bear market and how difficult that is sometimes, we had to rethink it because sometimes we would get right below the threshold of a passed vote or that kind of thing. And it was just, you know, fairly frustrating. So we wanted something a little more flexible to be able to keep people coming into the SIG program and not feel like we're leaving them on hanging and that kind of thing. So this is what we've done. And we had our first successful vote last week. Essentially what it is, CW, is we collect votes for a month. A week before voting occurs, we freeze this application, which you see up on the screen here. And we tell all our members that we have a study week. So everybody has a week to dive into the applications, really get to know the people if they don't know them, or ask around and see if they can know them. Yep. And at the end of that week, we have a 2-day weekend where we just vote like crazy. And our thresholds have changed as well, the algorithm. Essentially, if we have a number of yes votes with no votes, we pass them. If there's a no vote, even a single no vote, we hold that application and we discuss it in the Sunday SIG meeting together in a mini closed session for that amount of time. And then we either pass them, we go back to the table to ask them some more questions, or we, you know, let them know that their application wasn't accepted. So what you're seeing here, CW, is the actual SigmaNaut application. You can come here. There's some explanation on how it works. It looks like I have not updated this blurb to say exactly when the voting occurs, but I can do that momentarily. And you fill this out. Of course, this is only if you don't have anybody to sponsor you. If you know a SigCan or you know a SigmaNaut, you can say, hey, CW, you're a SigmaNaut. Can you sponsor me to become a SigCan? And CW can say, yep, you're good. You're in the chats. You're a community member. Let me talk to them and we'll modify your permissions in Discord so you can be in the SigCan channel and start that conversation. Or if you don't know anybody, you're welcome to fill out this form and go from there as far as that goes. Yeah. How long, CW, how long has SigmaNaut been around for?
Ooh, that's That's a good question. Off the top of my head, what would it be? I think in the infancy, maybe 12 months, roughly, or if not longer. I'd have to go back and check on that one. But yeah, it's been around for quite a while. But just over the recent maybe 6 months or so, it's gotten a lot of traction now. So yourself included, you've had, among other people, have had a significant role in building this up. And look what you've done there. You've created some websites. You hold the voting infrastructure. And once again, look at what we've got here. We've put together, or the Sigma Nauts have put together the mission statement. So it's a sort of overarching guidance document of what Sigma Nauts should hold themselves to, which is great, sort of leading document. But then also that then can be broken down into sort of little subcommittees as well. So for instance, like treasuries and governance and socials and all kinds of bits and pieces. So yeah, it's a great initiative. And I think just touching on your point that you made around the voting process, having that dedicated week study, I myself am quite guilty of becoming quite lapse in regards to looking at the applications, especially if it's just one coming in every so often. You don't dedicate enough time that we should be doing to that. But having that dedicated week and then that dedicated weekend to actually submit votes, I think that's fantastic.
And I think with applicants coming in, people are like, what do I have to do to look like a viable candidate here? And I think I put it on the top here. We gave you a little tips on actions. So a lot of people that are voting look for if you're active in the community, or if you're on Twitter, or you're, you know, reposting YouTube clips or that kind of thing, just that you're active in the community, you're showing interest in that kind of thing. And then when you come in to be a SIGCAN, you know, continue to do the same thing, continue to engage. We have a start here link in Discord in the SIGCAN channel, which kind of gives you some tips on what you can do to help with marketing and other holes you can fill as far as that goes. So, and then you have the full SIGCAN channel and the Sigma Nauts channels that you can chat in with other like-minded people and hopefully help spread the message of Ergo even further.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's also quite important to note that you can be as active or sort of inactive as you wish to be. So a lot of people, yourself included, take quite a significant role in the Sigma Nauts, but then others can kind of be part of the group, just keep reading through documentation and the chat, the transcripts that are put out from the meetings and things, just to keep up to date. But then also they just go about their usual sort of business and try and spread all the love that they can. So yeah, it's the amount of time that you actually want to allocate, it's up to you.
Well said. Perfect. Yep. Awesome. And we put that too. We put similar to what CW just said in your welcome message when you join the SIGs. Yeah. Exactly what he said. Perfect. Okay, so let's just quickly go through and welcome the 4, 5, or 6 new members that we have that we just voted in this week. The first one we have is Jerry. The Twitter name, or the what's it called? The Telegram name is JNErgo Jerry, and Jerry is coming to us as a creator. He's the owner of the ErgoPad Ideas and Tech Incubator page, and has been involved with the community for close to 2.5 years. Wow, that's quite a long time. Welcome, Jerry.
Welcome aboard.
What do we have next, CW?
Next up, we have Rashad. So once again, he's following Jerry there on the creator's role, willing to sort of dedicate a number of hours, so up to 8 or so, which is pretty significant. Runs into a lot of about me personal experience, filmmaker whose work has appeared on major networks like Al Jazeera and PBS, short narrative films and so on. So be great to see some media coming on there. He'd like to improve Ergo's visibility in the mainstream media space, and with its manifesto being at the forefront. It'd be great to see some sort of cinematography around that. It'd be fantastic to watch.
Didn't we have somebody a year or two ago that was making these like mini like cinematic promo videos of Ergo?
That was Hugo. Hugo is a South African, and he's basically a filmmaker and takes some stock footage and all kinds of things and compiles all that into sort of some nice documentary footage.
Kind of a motivational thing, right? Very cool. All right, next we have Carl, whose telegram is Kisagape, and same with Discord. They are willing to dedicate 4 or so hours. They're a newbie to the ecosystem about 1 year ago. They purchased some ETH NFTs on the advice of a relative. And after doing a deep dive, they got everything they could get their hands on. they firstly focused on accumulating tokens, and they read a white paper on Cardano and really liked the humanitarian nature of the ecosystem. So they moved to Cardano NFTs. And then from there, I imagine they saw Ergo like a lot of people do and make that transition and came over to Ergo to see what was up and stayed, which is great.
Once again, I'll always say this, Ergo just has some kind of gravitational force and just attracts a lot of like-minded people. And the people who do sort of end up in our ecosystem do dive quite deep into the sort of the ecosystem and do become quite active, which is fantastic to watch. Okay, so following on, we have Fred Clark Jr. He's provided quite a significant...
A lot of work went into this application, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a little cover page sort of CV sort of scenario that we've got going on here. So day job, field engineer and cellular communications. What else has he got going on? Convictions to create a DAO, which is great to see on that decentralization front. What else have we got here? Yeah, it just looks like loves the decentralized nature and everything of Ergo. So I think that appeals to a lot of people.
Yeah, it seems like he's very interested in working on DAOs and Ergo, which is pretty. And he's got a whole page devoted to that in his application, which is really nice.
Yeah, exactly. And reading a couple of snippets there, I'm quite impressed with some of the commentary in regards to the assumptions and what to look out for in regards to macro environments and centralized entities and things like that. So one thing that we do sort of beat our drum with on our sidekick show on Hash It Out, we get quite passionate about that sort of topic. So it's great to see that on this application.
Very cool. Next we have Eva Quinn, who is, Telegram, that's wrong 21, or Eva Quing on Discord. They are role of interest as a translator, which is awesome. We get some of those, which is fantastic. They are in the Ergo China community, translator manager, and translated many English articles into Chinese for Ergo since November 2020. Wow, these guys have been around a while. This is great. We got some old people coming in to join the six. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, so Eva's quite a prominent sort of community member, is a community manager for the Chinese community, quite active and does provide numerous updates pretty much on the monthly front in regards sort of the sentiment on that side of the community. So keeps us updated and once again does provide a number of sort of suggestions and things like that we can try and improve our things for that community, which is fantastic.
Yeah, I think didn't Eva just have a spicy talk about airdrops in Sigmana channel, SigCan channel, which that definitely doesn't ruffle feathers, but a lot of people, you're either passionate about what airdrops mean and how much it brings to the ecosystem, or Eva was bringing up some topics about how we could use airdrops to really engage more people and bring them in. And there was a good healthy back and forth between those two. It was a good talk.
Yeah, definitely. And so moving on, we have Lado Pixel. So those who don't know, Lado is quite a significant community member and quite active community member. So if you're not sure of what sort of Lato does, created ergotutorials.com. If you want to jump on there, I think that's a really underutilized resource within the community. There's tutorials from how to mint an NFT to setting up wallets and all kinds of different things. So I encourage everyone to jump on there and check that one out. Also does ergowallets.org, ergotokens.org, ergonfts.org. Part of that just released a UI for audio NFTs. So it's like a player. It looks at your wallet and see what audio NFTs are in there. Very, very active community members. Also creates a number of NFT projects as well. So you'll see them throughout the Auction House and Sky Harbor.
That is great. And an example for this is how this voting system works too is somebody saw, one of the Sigmanauts saw that Lato Pixel submitted an application and they went right onto our voting system and left a comment that nominated Lato Pixel because of their involvement in the community and how much they're doing to go straight to a Sigmanaut status. So Lato, as soon as they were voted in, was elevated right to the Sigmanaut status and went right over the SigCan status. So that's possible as well. If you're already an active community member and you think, oh, I don't want to, you know, go to Sig then Sigmanaut, then, you know, if you're known in the community and you even have a sponsor, then you go right to Sigmanaut as far as that goes. Do not, you know, skip go kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that's very warranted in the case of Lato there. One thing I love about Lato as well, he's a tinkerer, so he's always messing with like sort of Raspberry Pis and little LCD screens and all kinds of things like that. So yeah, good fun.
Lastly, we have Ergo Benjamin. And Ergo Benjamin is Discord Benson and Telegram Benjamin Larkey. Interested in creator and marketing, willing to dedicate about 5 hours. So they are an Ergonaut who makes videos on Ergo, about Ergo, its NFTs, DApps, Wallops, and much more on YouTube. You can find their channel. Just had it up here. I can put it in the comments below. But
I think it's Ergo Benjamin off
YouTube. Oh, that's what I Googled. Yeah. Ergo Benjamin YouTube. They're really interested in making Ergo easy for new users. Which is definitely needed. You know, in Ergo here, we, you know, a lot of us are fortunate to be heavily involved. So we know the technical side and it comes, you know, it comes at different levels for everybody, but, you know, this kind of stuff can be quite daunting for new users as far as that goes for sure. So that's great.
Yeah. I encourage everyone to give that a quick Google. We can probably put the link for his YouTube channel. Jump on there and give a subscribe. There's numerous videos on there and not many views, so I encourage everyone to jump on there and give Ergo Benjamin some love.
All right, next up we have for a topic, CW. Now this Ergo hack, you've done something new that you've proposed via a raffle. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so we first did this for Ergo Hack Fest. So the one I think was held in around June or so of last year. So we did a similar sort of scenario here. So for Ergo Hack 6 Cypherpunk Finance, we are holding a community vote. So what that entails, the prize pool, there's 1,000 ERG prize pool, which was community funded. And ultimately, the community can have their say in what their favorite projects are. So if you want to jump on to the link, we can actually link this below as well. You can jump on there and have your say. You can have up to 3 votes. Voting's anonymous, and voting closes on the 13th of March at 12 p.m. UTC. And there you go. You've got all the options. They're just a little sort of checkbox, the name, and then just a little sentence or two of what the actual project is. If you want to check out, dive deeper into what the actual project entails and their final submissions, you can jump onto docs.ergoplatform.org.com. The link is there and jump on there and check it out. There's like a little paragraph, or here you go. You can see that now. QX has just brought that up. Got all the projects listed there with their submission papers, GitHub links, so you can see the code and everything. Some very, very significant projects this Ergo hack, which is fantastic to see, and very, very broad and varying topics of what people have chosen to build, which is great to see for the Ergo ecosystem.
CW, now how does this differ from the voting that goes on officially to determine the big prize pool winners from the EF, from the Treasury?
So the EF actually runs the ErgoHack project itself, so funding and everything like that. Part of that, we have a co-sponsor. So in this one, it is ErgoPad. So we have a developer from the ErgoPad team on the judging panel, Lua Vatra. And also we have Ilya from the Spectrum team. So for this ErgoHack, we've got 5 judges, 3 from the foundation and 2 independent judges. And their technical ability to be able to sort of see the depths of the code, interpret what sort of what people are building and things like that from the technical level of what people are submitting. So having that deep knowledge of the ecosystem, the technical attributes to add, to be able to sort of look at the projects and assess on their merits. The community side of things, we hold these to try and engage a lot more of the community people to look at what people are actually building, get some eyes over it, get some enthusiasm and encouragement to try and go out there and spread the word of what people are actually building here throughout these Ergo hacks as well. So it's a fantastic initiative, I think. I myself, part of the Ergo Hack Fest side of things, I was really excited to jump on there and be able to have my say, because people look at it from the outside looking in, they can see numerous projects, and what the technical side of people, like the judging aspect, it might not align with a, for example, like a degenerate sort of NFT fund sort of thing, which could be great for the community, but the ecosystem as a whole on the technical level, it could be differing a little bit that way. So that's sort of the mindset, just a different, not looking at any project specifically on that scenario, but just a little example there of how things could differ.
Gotcha. That is really neat. And this was, what's it called? This raffle ran for a couple of weeks, was it, or 2 weeks?
It ran roughly for about 2 weeks. So it's great to see the community get on board and throw up some funds, which is great. I think having that engagement, people wanting to be part of the community, wanting to put up a couple of erg here and there for initiatives like these to encourage the development on Ergo and just sort of spread the word and engagement and show the devs some love.
That is cool. That is really cool. All right, let's see. Let's switch over to, we have a few marketing updates this week. I think I've actually thrown 2 of them on Twitter already to support those, but let's just hit over them again. First up, we have Grand Gambit. They added Comet reward system, where every player has a 50% chance of receiving free 10,000 comet, which is a solid amount in his opinion. Thanks to the Comet team for every play made. Grand Gambit had 1,500 TXs a day, which led them to waking up with a few reported bugs, all fixed now. Last 3 to 4 days, there have been around 3,500 TXs done. Soon they'll be listing more tokens with the Ergo ecosystem, which they just did yesterday, I think, was ErgoPad, right?
Yeah, correct. They've just recently announced that.
And soon they'll be launching a Discord server too for those that use this. That happened as well. So if you want to check that out, head over to the Grand Gambit Discord and hang out with some other gambling degens.
It's good fun jumping on there and having a coin flip every now and then. And I haven't taken away any comet yet, so I don't know if that's encouraging me to play even more because I want to chase my tail or not. So
you haven't lost any comet?
I haven't received any, so you got the 50% chance on actually receiving some. So yeah, I haven't won any yet, unfortunately.
The other day I started out with I think 20,000 comet, no, 10,000. And I just did double. I bet on red with roulette, and I got up to 80,000 comma. I was like, all right, I just gotta. So then I put it on black, and I lost everything except 10,000.
Full degenerate mode.
Yeah, full, totally.
And just touching on that, there is a gambler's help guide on the website as well. So if you need some help on that front, by all means, check that one out.
Yes, serious mode.
Yeah.
There is help available.
Always have to throw that disclaimer in.
Yes.
Okay, so following on from Grand Gambit, we have an update from Glasgow. So he's been busy once again. And unfortunately, Adobe's ruined Figma and neutered the free plan. So he's moved the Ergo Figma to Lunacy and mostly exported. Most of the Figma files have exported fine, but they're not quite perfect. So I'll be fixing those up. Also added a page for the Howie test in light of the SEC's drama of late. So maybe something the community could push at the moment with this narrative going around. Ergo is well positioned here compared to most. So if you're interested in that, jump on there and check out the wording around what's how Ergo's positioned on that front. And if you want to sort of make some noise, by all means, do so.
So for those that don't know, the Howie test helps determine if your project is a security or not. Is that the deal?
Yeah, correct. Not being an American, I'm not up to date on my security laws. But basically, I think it was from the 1930s or thereabouts. There's basically a four-prong scenario. And if I believe it's positive, if you're positive to the Howie test or four prongs or something, then you are deemed a security. So Ergo is quite well positioned on that front of not being a security. What else do we have here? So also updating the ecosystem standards. So if you want to check out the page that's linked below for building, if you're building on Ergo, and has also created a post for liquidity provision and yield opportunities experiences on Ergo. It's something that's underutilized in the ecosystem and should be should also try and push to improve liquidity on centralized exchanges, et cetera. And also open to any ideas, spectrum farming and other dApps coming out of beta should help a little. Just on that front, there's grid bot opportunities. There's numerous things. There's actually AMM pools on CoinEx, I believe, still. If you want to sort of provide liquidity on that front, it does open, provide liquidity to order books. And you can, it's quite lucrative over time, especially when the market's sort of stagnant and then just basically in a range, grid bots are quite profitable. So it does help out the ecosystem. But with that, there is a disclaimer. You're holding your coins on a centralized exchange. With that, you do not have custody. So just be cautious of that.
That's a tough one. Yep. Okay. And then we have Sisyphus Push, who absolutely did an amazing job with their Ergo 2022 NFT awards. They sent their winners physical tokens. They should be receiving them this week. They probably already should have. One already received the package. And then not only did Sisyphus Push do all this, but he left you the accounting trail. He showed you the raffle links, the transaction IDs for everything, the receipts I think he has down here. He blanked out the tracking numbers. I mean, Sis went all out here showing you the legitimacy,
transparency,
of what he did. Yeah, which is absolutely fantastic. And it's really neat. Not only did these people win their categories virtually, but he also had somebody with a laser cutter make these very beautiful kind of physical NFTs.
Yeah, I was going to make mention of that actually, because there's a post on Sis's Twitter account if you want to check them out. They're fantastic quality. I wouldn't mind having one myself, but I am definitely not the artistic type, and I don't think I'd be winning an NFT contest anytime soon.
All right, let's see, what do we have next? Oh, next up we have the Dan interview, so we will roll that for you. And I kept the same shirt on for the entire 3 weeks, so it's kind of smelly. CW changed his shirt.
Yeah, it's a little bit cooler, so I'll put a jumper on.
But we'll be back to say bye to you after that interview. Here you go.
Yep, enjoy.
All right, Dan, why don't you tell us, give me some ideas on your beginning, because all the shows that I've seen, you know, it's always you off running with what's going on right now. What the hell brought you into crypto, where you are today, how you started with Cardano, and how you jumped over to Ergo as far as that goes. And my job here is to keep you on track with the questions, Dan. And CW has to keep me on track with the questions too. So it's kind of a three-way tier here where we have to kind of watch each other.
Right. This is that meme where like the three people aiming guns at each other. Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, good luck with that. Because I am pretty long-winded.
Why don't you start with when you were
back? Do you want me to go? Like,
start when you were
back
a toddler.
A toddler,
Dan.
Okay. Well, so I was born in the 70s. Do you guys remember the 70s?
I was born in 81. Come on. I'm not that old. I'm not that young.
Yeah, but you don't remember the 70s. I remember the 70s. I remember like a couple of things from the 70s, which is pretty messed up. Not particularly have to do with the 70s per se, like the cultural part of it, but just have images in my head. And I know they're from the 70s. It is just odd to me now because it's 2023. So yeah, born in Soviet Ukraine, which was lots of fun. And so I was always into, you know, science. And my dad is a IT person and actually a researcher by trade. He has a doctoral in cybernetics and AI, like machine learning, I guess you could say that's the equivalent of what it is. And so he was always encouraging me to, you know, take more like scientific interests. And yeah, since I was a kid, I was always into like physics and astronomy and eventually got into computers. And so this is in the 80s and this is in the Soviet Union. And so you can't just like go to a store and buy a computer. I mean, maybe you could, but, you know, we didn't have that much money. So I was interested in computers and I had books about computers, but I never actually like used a computer. I had typewriters and like the manual ones too. And, but my dad was in IT. And so he encouraged me to study this stuff. And so I started studying BASIC. And so what I would do is I would actually like, I'd read books about it. And then I would write down a program on paper. And then he would take it to work and he'd like, you know, he'd input it into the computer and then he would bring me a printout of like the result.
And right, so to you, show that you it screwed ran. Up, Dan. You got to fix this.
Well, I mean, thanks for, you know, destroying my childhood memories. But really nice of you. Anyway, that's my cat trying to get in. He knows how to open doors, but I know how to block them. So, I am smarter. Right. So, fast forward to coming to the U.S. I came to the U.S. when I was 12. And, of course, my dad, you know, the job of IT again, because that's what he did. And so, we had our first computer was an AT. So, it was a 286. AT with like what was it like 512K memory, amber monochrome monitor, and so like one of the things for that was, so there were really almost no games that you could play on monochrome monitors because back then we had CGA and EGA VGA monitors. Like VGA was like the top of the line, like only rich people had VGA monitors. So like the middle class version of a color monitor was the EGA, which is like 16 colors or something like that. And but we were poor, so we just got the cheapest monitor, was this like amber monochrome monitor. And so the only thing that, and they never had any like action games on it, the only thing that we had on this was Sierra games. I don't know if you guys remember Sierra games, but, you know, Police Quest, Quest for Glory, Space Quest. And those are like the only games that I could play on there. And so like my entire memory of my first real games is all in amber, you know, it's just really weird. And so that was also, the era of BBS. And so it would, like the other thing that I would do is I would I'd use, what was it? What the hell was it? The dialing program. It was like something plus. I forgot what it was called, but it was it was just a dialer, right? And so you would dial into these different BBSs, and you would you know, grab code, and sometimes you get like game walkthroughs for games I couldn't play. And so I started really digging that, and into, I was in the ones that I would visit were these two. I don't even know where they were. I can never actually find them online now, because online they have actually pretty extensive catalogs of BBSs, but for some reason these are not on there. So the one that I used to go to was Sanitarium BBS. And this other one was called Freetown. And Freetown was, I had a lot more stuff, but it had like all these rankings and stuff, and I could never like get through security the right way. And so, yeah, they had KYC. Yeah, contingent BBSing. And yeah, so basically I also kind of started to think, I'm like, oh, shit, man, I wanted some action games. And so so what I started to do is I started to go and borrow the books, these books at the library that would have like game code. And then I would build on top of that code. I actually started that with, my first computer was actually a Tandy 64. So this was before we got the 286. My dad bought me a Tandy 64 at the flea market. And that thing was, you know, from the 80s, like it had like cartridges on the side. And you would also, you could save your RAM on a metal tape. So you would connect this, you know, like this, one of these big ass like tape recorders from the 70s. Or like mid 80s, you know, like the giant ones with the cassette. And so not even like the mini ones, right? The big ass ones, the full size ones. And so I rigged this thing up to save programs, but I could only save like 34K on it, something like that. It was really, really small. And it would take like 15 or 20 minutes to save the thing, a metal tape. And so it just, I wrote some games on that, but really my main moment came when we got the 286. And even though there was no color on there, I could write more because it was a lot more powerful. But my restriction was the video cards. And so what I did was I started kind of trying to interpret these games into like monochrome versions so that I could play them. And so eventually I got into doing stuff like not just like changing the code on those games to be able to play them on monochrome monitors, but also like I remember I probed up did you guys ever see War Games?
Mm-hmm.
From the 80s?
Yeah. Matthew Broderick, was that Matthew?
Yeah, with Matthew Broderick. Yeah. I programmed up Global Thermonuclear War in BASIC.
So you hand type this all? Or are you getting code from jeez.
No. Like I hand typed it, and then I drew the map with, you know, screen dot one, one dot one.
Yeah. A little turtle thing. One. Yeah.
Yeah. Just like I drew the whole thing. I did like I typed the whole thing up. It took me like a week to do.
Did you go to school at this time, Dan?
No. This is just school? From my dad. Like my dad just gave me books on. I never actually formally went to school for IT. Like I took some classes in college and never actually, like, I have about 3 years towards a degree, but I never graduated. I started working you know, I just never went back. Well, it's something that I actually want to do eventually is finish up school. But started doing that. And so I guess fast forward a few years. And so I started getting more and more into, I guess, you know, the internet. When it was just kind of starting up back in the mid 90s. And I started getting into, back then it was Gopher browser. This is like one of the first ones out there. This is back when, there was like a hack you could use, right? So if you had like AOL or Prodigy, which were these like online services back then before the internet browser
Good old AOL. Era. My goodness, yeah.
Yeah, AOL, Prodigy, CompuServe. I actually was in CompuServe. CompuServe was pretty cool. I actually liked CompuServe the most. AOL was a little too commercial for me, you know. Like I always like kind of CompuServe seemed more like, I don't know, intuitive and just kind of cooler. But
well, AOL was like the Apple equivalent of the browsing the web, where they do everything for you. You just click on little buttons and it's all pretty. And
yeah. It didn't seem kind of like hacky boy, cypherpunky guy type of thing yet. So I started messing with that, but there was a hack, and I forgot how I did it, but basically there was a way to set these services up because they would actually, when the internet started going mainstream, more and more mainstream, they would actually charge you for being online, like $2 an hour or something like that. But there was a way to set these things up where you can actually use Gopher. And if you set it up the right way, you just like launch AOL and it would act as your ISP. And you just go through Gopher and it would be free, you know. I mean, it wouldn't be like any extra charges by the hour. And so I started doing that and got into, you know, internet stuff. Started doing what was it back then? Java servlets. Because I was never into all the entire Microsoft stack, like ASP and all this like then Visual Basic was a big thing. I guess it still kind of is.
Was big back then.
Yeah, Visual Basic, then C. But I was always like a Java person. And so I started really getting into that. And so I was also going to school to get a computer science degree, but never finished it because actually I got a contract from McGraw-Hill. This is back in like 1998.
Publishing company?
And I had my own like McGraw-Hill.
Publishing company?
Yeah, the publisher, yeah. And I was doing like my own business where I would make these internet malls. They were called back. So back in those days, like one of the big things that everybody tried to get into local business would want is to be part of an internet mall. And it's basically just a website with all these like pages on there for different business, right? And so I would go to like Chamber of Commerce meetings and all these different local association meetings and onboard people to these internet malls that I would put together. And so I was in it for a few years. I was in it for like since like, well, I mean, I started getting online back in like 94, I think. When I started really kind of digging into it in 95, 96. I went to college in 96. By about 98, like and a half, I had actually fairly solid experience, as it turns out. And wait a second. Did it like zoom out or something?
You're good. Leave it. It's high quality now. You're great. You got a good pipe. Go for it.
Okay, because you can see my junk behind me.
I'll crap you out anyway. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, like my Cardano Summit bottle.
Perfect.
Got to scratch that.
Yeah. Well, I'll put ergo on that label.
Yeah. Just superimpose stuff. But anyway, and so at that point I got a contract from McGraw-Hill saying that they wanted to find out why they had like 14 or 15 websites and they didn't know why these websites weren't getting any traffic. And so they got me to go through their code. And it was basically SPO, you know, but back then it was just, optimization. Back then they just wanted to know why it didn't work. And so I went through their code and I told them, okay, so you have to rewrite the code in this way and you should put like metadata tags in it and, index it properly and this and that. And so, and they paid me quite a bit for this. This was like several thousand dollars. And, you know, and back when you're like 19 years old and, you know, just kind of get like whatever, like what it was like $3,000-$4,000 for just looking at some websites and telling these guys what to do with them for like a week. Like, oh shit, this is kind of cool. And yeah, so started getting more and more into it. And so actually then I got a longer contract with McGraw-Hill and this company that was working with them called TubeBridge that was writing a content management system. And so at that point, you know, this was whatever, 20, almost 25 years ago. The content that was online was changed by hand, right? So you have to pull the site down, change the content, put the HTML in there, make sure that it's formatted right, make sure that it's, you know, cross-browser compatible. That was a big thing then because Internet Explorer wouldn't show the same things the same way as Mozilla would or Netscape would. And so so it would be like a big task. And so what started to happen was companies, and this is before WordPress, all that, company put together these enterprise level content management systems. And so they would take content. And so the TubeBridge was actually pretty was writing pretty revolutionary software. So it's called TubeShare. And what TubeShare was basically the software that you could set up and run your website from. And you can set up templates, right? And they called them pluglets. And these pluglets had different functionalities. You know, you'd have like articles, you had polls, you'd have, you know, like art gallery or photo galleries, whatever. You plug them into parts of the website and it would be cross-browser compatible and you can deliver dynamic content and you could actually change content dynamically through a wizard. So they didn't have to pull down the website anymore. So it was like a big thing, you know, because they didn't have this like team of webmasters that would pull these pages down and they would just have the editors just upload Word files and then the thing would be up on the website. And so I was working for this company for a few years, just doing stuff in Java servlets and, you know, just kind of getting up and working with Oracle. It was Oracle 7 and there was Oracle 8 relational databases. And so, yeah, I was doing IT for a while for about 10 years plus at that point. And then I just kind of started to, you know, expand into project management and to doing more and more of my own enterprises. Then when I moved to Japan, it was kind of like one of those, you know, early midlife crises, you know, 30 something crises. So I moved to Japan and I started getting more into augmented reality because I just thought it was really cool. And there was a lot of applications for that at the time. And I still think there is. It just needs to be kind of, you know, rethought. But I started doing that and it turned out that there were several companies out here that were really interested in that at that point. And so I was actually started working for one of these companies as an R&D lead. For augmented reality. And then as things progressed, I became the CTO of the company because the main product of the company became this augmented reality application that they developed for a company called Duskin, which is basically the like the Procter & Gamble of Japan. That's the best equivalent for it. You know, they do everything. They own restaurants, they have their own products, they everything. And yeah, and so I was doing that for a few years and it was just kind of just working for a Japanese company is kind of soul crushing sometimes. If you're not Japanese, because it's just they're really stubborn about pivoting. Like they just do not want to pivot. And the most simplest and obvious things are just really, really difficult because like, oh no, we're doing it this way. Yeah, but this way is the industry standard and the way you're doing it is stupid. And like, oh no, we'll keep doing it this way. So eventually I kind of got tired of that, and I started looking for new opportunities. But obviously I was going to stay in Japan. I was looking for opportunities in Japan. And so, as it turned out, a good friend of mine who's actually working with me at Zengate right now, was friends or acquaintances with Charles's former business partner, Wood, who lived in Osaka at that point. And so at that point, they were starting up Cardano. And it was really, you know, it was a few months after they started the pre-sale. And they only had a few people, mostly researchers. And actually, Alex was there at that point. Kush was already there doing research. And he was like one of the first people that I met at IOHK. And so I started the pre-sale. And so they needed a project manager. They needed somebody who knew how to do this stuff professionally, you know, just kind of run. So at that point, the entire pre-sale was being done in Japan. And the software that ran the pre-sale was just called the sales app. And so this thing ran everything from KYC to distribution to retailer shop or resellers management portal to it had a KYC portal. It had a retailer management portal that had like personal holder portal as well. So if you had what back then were vouchers for ADA before we had mainnet, you could check through the portal. And then eventually when we launched mainnet, we created a faucet that converted the voucher into actual ADA. So so I ran the pre-sale, app. I was the first official project manager in input output. And several of the people that were on my team still work at input output or with input output. So fast a few more years, I started doing many things after the pre-sale was over. I started getting more into facilitation of just, you know, different workflows within the company, kind of started to get the project management pipelining going. After that, I started the commercial side. And that was the first, when there was no more project for me to manage for the pre-sale, I said, well, okay, so now I'm going to do business development. And it was the first one in the company that had the title business development. And I actually did that on, I just said business development. I didn't say business development manager. I didn't say business development director. I just said business development. So that let people's imagination run, because I didn't think, you know, kind of specifying a title. So I did that for some years until we actually started to build up a commercial department. And yeah, within those years, I mean, they did some really cool things. We built up a did system for the Ministry of Education of Georgia. We also did one for Ethiopia. They just rolled out. I also did one of the first mainstream blockchain-based authentication deals with New Balance. Various, you know, interesting projects, really cool projects. I remember when Ergo launched in 2019. I actually remember when Ergo launched, we were talking about it, and we were talking about mining Ergo. And so I don't know if they actually ever got around to doing that or not. I remember there was like one of the pieces of business that was brought on, you know, that was brought to my desk, or whatever the expression is, crossed my desk. What is the expression? Yeah. Whatever. Anyway, it came across my desk.
Yep.
It came across my desk. Yeah, that's it. And so I just kind of started following the project. And then I think about like a year and a half later, not a year and a half, but even before that, I had actually several friends in Japan who are big time ergo holders, and they knew that I was working with other projects, and they were just telling me, they're like, Hey Dan, you know, why don't you try to work with ergo? You know, why don't you see if you can kind of, you know, help guide some things over there and do what you did for Cardano. And so eventually I just kind of, you know, I started kind of digging into it more and more and more. And I approached Alex and I said, hey, I mean, this is really cool stuff. I'd like to be involved. You know, I'd like to, you know, do what I did for Cardano. I'd like to see if I can do that for Ergo as well. And yeah, and so one thing led to another. We started talking, then it was brought in front of the foundation, and the foundation decided to take me on. And yeah, so here I am.
I think it's fair to say that we're pretty lucky to have someone with such broad experience of such as yourself in the foundation and advising for the Ergo ecosystem. So nice little bit of experience.
It's a pleasure. There. You know, I'm very, you know, my love and faith for Ergo never fades. It only gets bigger. So, I mean, I feel fortunate to be in this ecosystem and be able to really contribute to where things can, you know, to really make a change.
Dan, besides Alex and the massive force that he is moving Ergo forward, what really sticks to you about Ergo that you love besides that?
Well, first of all, the community. I mean, the community is great. You know, it just feels really, really kind of properly positioned. You know, it just feels like, you know, people's heads are in the right place. People are building. People are cheering the right things. The sentiment is really cool. It's just a great community. And also, well, the tooling. A lot of it is really, really useful, really straightforward. You know, like one of the first things I did on Ergo was I wanted to mint some tokens. And, you know, I started asking like, okay, so how do I mint some tokens? And then I think UCW or maybe Joe told me, just go to this website. And I go to the website and it's like 30 seconds later, I minted a bunch of tokens. I'm like, what? That was easy. Okay.
For a couple of pennies.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like super cheap. You know, the same with NFTs. Like, wait a second. That's it? Really? Okay. You know, it's like all the stuff, you know, the tooling, I really like it. It's really cool. It's really straightforward. It's really powerful. The protocol, the protocol security is really honest. The mining model, the block production model is really, I feel it's really, it's all about low barrier of entry for people wanting to participate in the system. And I think that is a big, big thing. And I personally like that a lot. You know, I like that you don't need to have, you know, a huge server room to be able to participate in securing the network. I like it that you don't need to have a huge amount of knowledge about programming or about all these different things to be able to build something on Ergo. I just really admire that and about the ecosystem. And I really think that that's going to really drive mass adoption of the ecosystem as we go.
What's your sales pitch, Dan? So let's, in the recent example where you, your announcement where you partnered with the tea company to help with tracking those commodities. What's your sales pitch with that kind of thing? What's your aha moment that you can give those companies to get them to say, damn, you know, Ergo is really going to work for me on this kind of thing. It's really going to benefit my company.
My aha moment for not just for Ergo, but for any blockchain that I use is, like, don't talk about it. Not that much. I mean, I know it might not be something that some people want to hear, but average tea grower doesn't give a shit about any blockchain stuff. They just don't. And that's really something we have to understand as an industry and as a community. We appreciate it. And this is why I choose to use it, because I feel that this is a is a pivotal part of my business. And it's something that makes sense to me, right? To the average tea grower, they don't care how it does it as long as it makes things easier, cheap, faster for them. So I don't sell that, Ergo's got great, it's great tooling. It's got great security, and it's, and I can build like a roll-up really easily to manage throughput. And I could, I can do all this stuff. Like they don't care. They just care that, okay, what you're going to have is a marketplace where we can get a wider range of customers to buy your product, and the tooling that surrounds your product is going to be traceability, is going to be instant transfers, is going to be easier access to funding and to funds, and be transparent. That's it. And that, to a business person, to any business person, that is what they want to hear. They don't want to hear about network security. If they ask about it, I'll tell them. And the more they ask about it, the more I'll, but I'm not going to lead with that. And I think that businesses building on Ergo or any blockchain should not be leading with technology. They should be leading with business case, with why the business should care about business stuff. You know, I mean, that's what it's all about. So, I hope that wasn't too harsh, but it doesn't mean that I don't care about the technology. I obviously do. And it doesn't mean that the average person shouldn't care about the technology, because they should. But they shouldn't really have to care about all these different things that are under the hood. They should just be able to know that it's secure, that it's fast, that it's transparent, and all this is going to bring them more and more income. And that's what business is about. You know, it's optimization of processes and optimal income for through ethical business practices.
Have you ever had a reverse moment where, there's the businesses are looking for something that Ergo can't currently provide, and you bring that channel back through, and we try to work up a solution that can actually support that?
Yeah, absolutely. Like for example, I was speaking to a nation state about utilizing Ergo, and the issue was that the network is just too small. They were worried about security. They were worried about and again, this is not about so. They actually had some blockchain knowledge, but it was not all like correct. So they were worried about like 51% attacks. And they said, well, it's $100 million ecosystem. At that point, I think it was like $100 million ecosystem. You know, it's $100 million market cap. So that means that for $50 million, it can crash their network. I'm like, well, no, it doesn't. That's not how 50% attacks work. Yeah, but they can just buy $50 million worth of Ergo and they can own the system. Like, well, no, because the more you buy, the more scarce the supply becomes, the more the price goes up. That's, supply and demand. That's how it works. But anyway, but they were right about network throughput and about the ability to really sustain a large volume of transactions, and how are we going to say scale, like scaling, they were concerned about scaling. And again, this is something that I also we were also looking into with Palmyra, because eventually we're looking to run billions of dollars of business through the platform, which means, thousands of millions of transactions. When it gets to the scale of where we want it to be, and this is going to be multi-billion dollar system, right? And so when you run that much throughput through the platform, you need to make sure that it can handle that. So this is why we're going to be working with, we're trying to figure out something like a roll-up We're trying to figure out something where we could actually move assets between networks, between like Cardano and Ergo, do compensation. Maybe you know, see about bringing in extra rigs for hashing power. It takes quite a bit of planning to make sure that you can scale. Right. And yeah, that's kind of been a thing a few times, that people are worried that the size of the network is not going to be able to sustain the amount of the volume that they're looking to put through it. Now, this is just growing pains, I think. You know, it's every network what goes through this, and it's not a bad thing. It's just we need to grow, and we are growing, and we will be there. We'll get there. My hope and my mission is to have Palmyra drive us there as much as possible.
You mentioned Palmyra. It's one thing that we haven't sort of touched on in a little bit of detail. Is there something you can give us just a brief overview of what Palmyra is and what it's trying to achieve?
Right. So Palmyra is the world's first physically settled tokenized commodity DEX, or tokenized commodity exchange, that is going to be using NFTs to tokenize real-world commodities and focus on emerging economies, because this is where the most disparity lies within these markets, yeah, and the most opportunity for leapfrogging lies. And so really the mission of Palmyra is, I mean, our goal, our big goal is to run 1% of all commodity trade, of all the entire world's commodity trade through Palmyra. 1%. We don't want anything more. It's only going to be several billion dollars. Not too much. Nothing. Yeah. And really, again, here it is. Here is the here is what we talk about when we talk to say the Sri Lankan tea farmers, who are going to be participating in Palmyra, who are going to be benefiting from it, when we talk to tea factory owners. We don't really talk about blockchain. We don't. In fact, I did some interviews in Sri Lanka, and one of the things that they told me, like, don't say crypto and don't say blockchain. I'm like, okay, yeah. So I kept saying, and I actually, some of these interviews are posted on the Zengate YouTube channel if you guys want to take a look at them later. But if you notice, I never say blockchain. I say distributed ledger technology.
DLT. Very PC.
Oh, boy. Yeah, yeah. And they're like, oh, that's fine. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Just don't say blockchain. I'm like, okay, it's the same thing, but okay. I just say DLT. Oh, yeah, no, wrong on the DLT. Yeah, so it's going to be great, you know, DLT. Yeah, and so we talk about more market access, right? We talk about more buyers being able to have access to what they have to sell. Talk about a much more streamlined collateralization system, payment system that is a lot more streamlined and inclusive. We talk about stability and the transparency that provides, and the many benefits that it provides. That's what we talk about. How it's run, I mean, if they want to know how it's run, then we talk about that. And actually, the amount of knowledge that these places have about DLT is actually quite surprising. I had a meeting with a factory owner in Sri Lanka. It was like in the middle of nowhere, you know. It's just we went through 20 minutes of dirt roads, and but it's a great factory, and the guy knew what blockchain traceability was.
Like, okay. Wow.
You know, so yeah, it just, if they want to talk about it, I talk about it, but I don't feel they need to know what's under the hood to understand what it's going to do for them and how it's going to make their business better.
So in short, with these NFTs that are helping to provide a proof, that's essentially each commodity is going to be tagged to an NFT and have a link so that people can trace what that is, at least on a ledger, a public ledger.
Yeah. So basically, you're going to have a commodity lot. So say, for example, you have like a 10 kilogram bag of tea, right? 10 kilos. And it's for every industry, it's different. They have minimum sizes, right? So like, for example, for tea, they can't do like 1 kilo at a time. It's just not really worth it for them. You know, they have to do bigger lots. So what you do is you create tokenization for that lot. And then the NFT actually becomes a digital representation of that lot. And so the value of the lot moves through the blockchain via NFT. It's being purchased and traded by through the NFT and through smart contracts. You know, smart contracts are used for creating futures. Smart contracts are used for settlements. And smart contracts are used for a transfer of ownership and attaching information like traceability to it, like payment information, like stock information. So essentially creating a utility NFT. There's no monkey pictures attached to it, but we're going to have to live with that, I guess.
So they're not going to pay essentially an ergo for these NFTs. They'll do their transactions offline, off the blockchain, and transfer the NFTs to each other via that way method?
Not necessarily, no. The NFTs are going to be settled in Ergo. They're going to be bought on the Ergo blockchain. So they're going to be Ergo NFTs.
With Ergo.
Yeah, they're going to be minted on Ergo.
If I want to buy this section of this product that is tied to this NFT, am I literally buying the NFT with the amount of money that it costs to buy the commodity as well? Or the product as well?
Yes.
Or no?
Yes. So the price of the NFT is going to be equal to the price of the commodity lot. So essentially, you're buying a contract. The payment. So if you're talking about payment and payment rails that we're going to use, we have a combination. So we use fiat payment rails for like bank transfers, credit card payments, as well as instant settlements and crypto. So it's just all about giving all these guys all the options that they want. If they want to pay in crypto, they can pay in crypto. If they want to pay in Ergo, they can pay in Ergo. If they pay a credit card or a stables or with bank transfer, they can do that as well. So it's just all about giving flexibility, not forcing the industry into something where they might not be comfortable with. And so, of course, eventually I would like to see more and more settlement digital payments come through so we don't have to deal with banks. But for the time being, it's unrealistic to expect that it's just going to happen with a flip of the switch. You have to update, you have to educate why this is better, and you just have to let them use it. You have to let them show, you have to show them that this, you know, it's you because of this, because of the technology. So yeah, I hope that answered your question.
I think it did. CW, you got anything else? I think we gotta wrap it up. We still have some stuff to do after Dan leaves us.
No, it's a pretty in-depth sort of conversation there. So running through all your childhood, your experiences, leaving college itself, leading into your early professional career, your first steps into crypto through the Cardano site, and then ultimately ending up here and building on Ergo, the blockchain itself with Palmyra. So nice to see a nice little sort of personal journey there and a representation of sort of what Dan is about. So it'd be a nice little introduction for people who may not necessarily have followed you previously, but it's nice to have that now available here in Ergo.
We've got the exclusive on Dan's early childhood here on the Sigma update.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. Thanks for having me. And I'm glad we was thing done. I know we've been kind of, passing ships, not making it. But yeah, finally we did. I finally cornered CW about assuming things.
Never assume anything. We all know what happens.
Yeah, I know. I know. And today I'm probably just going to torture Sam about that too. All right. Well, guys, thanks a lot.
What's the best place for people to reach you and bug the hell out of you? Is that Twitter?
No, call me on the phone.
We'll put your number.
Send me a letter. KCW, what's your address? Oh, wait, cut that out. I should ask that before I said that. I know. Yeah. P.O. Box, one. Twitter. You can reach out to me on Gram. Just don't reach out to me with we are a advertising company with all this great shit that we can do. You like Ergo, right? We want to make Ergo really big. Or don't start it with hi and nothing else. That those are all saying, no, hi. And then I go and look at your profile on Telegram and there's like no name attached. I'm like, bye.
Yeah. I usually get the ones that a private buyer wants to buy like $2 million worth of Ergo or Erg.
Yeah.
I tell them
I just got that one. Yeah. They want to buy like do you know where I can do like C trade for $2 million worth of Ergo? I'm like,
Yeah, visit the market.
I don't know. go there. Like, what do I look like? You know, Mr. Ergo.
Oh boy. So where do we see you next? We'll see you next on the AMA update was this morning. So we'll see you next week at the AMA update.
That was last night for me because I'm in the future.
Oh, that's right. Well, you're in the past according to CW.
Yeah, by an hour. Australia, they can't even decide if they're a continent or if they're a country or if they're in Asia or if they're not in Asia. I'm like, how are you in Asia? You guys are in Asians.
Australia.
I know. I live in Asia. It's not Asia. It's like its own thing. You know, it's like Australia. I mean, it's, you know, like Asia is a
part of something.
You can't. You want to have your own continent. Have your own continent. Don't be like, yeah, we're our own continent, but we're also part of this other continent. Like, it doesn't work that way. You're European, you're European. You don't say, oh, I'm European, but I'm also part of America. Like, it doesn't work that way.
Well, we gotta hang out with someone because it's just ourselves and New Zealand down here by ourselves. So.
And New Zealand hates you guys, don't they? They're not fond of you.
We're brothers in arms.
Ah, that's what you say to New Zealand, but I don't know if that's what New Zealand says to you.
That's a love-hate relationship.
Kiwis, I mean, I see their point. You know, Australia can't figure out what they want. You know, it's like they want everything. Like, oh, we want our continent and name the country after the continent or the continent after the country. And then we want to be a part of this other continent. And we want to, have the bush we want to have this huge continent, but only have like three people living on it. I'm like, well, what's up, man? Populate the middle. The middle's in the middle. You know, there's like, anyway,
there's nothing there. There's no water.
It's like fire tornadoes in the middle, Dan. You can't live there.
Yeah, but they have this thing called irrigation. You know, the was invented a few years ago. you can grow oases in the desert and whatnot. Come on, guys, you can do it.
That should be your next.
It's all about motivation.
That should be your next business management project, Dan. Bring population to the center of Australia with the blockchain, with Ergo. Perfect.
Yeah,
you're welcome.
You know, I'm telling you, like Australia, I dig Australia, but I saw this one movie that just makes me like depressed about Australia. It was called that one made me like bullish about Australia. I want to see you eat some bugs, and knock somebody out with a sardine can. But the one that I saw was These Final Hours. It was this like super depressing Australian like apocalyptic like thing, and like Australia was basically it was like an indie movie, but it's actually pretty good, but it's so fucking depressing, man. Like it's just, you know, it's like the Armageddon is coming and like this basically this dude is like, it's his like final hours on Earth, and like he saves this girl, and just like, oh my god, man. And it was a good movie, so I wanted to finish watching it, but in the end I'm like, oh god, this is freaking depressing. And then like every time I think about Australia, I think about the end of the world.
Come on, mate, we're not that bad.
You gotta
you're working with one now.
Invite him down there to CW. Show him what Australia is really like.
Look, you just need to have less movies about the end of the world that happened in Australia. I mean, come on. These Final Hours, all of Mad Max. Mad Max, all of it.
Yeah.
Crocodile Dundee. That's a happy
Crocodile
movie.
Dundee, that's almost like apocalyptic, right? Post-apocalyptic in a way. What do you expect? I mean, this is like an image thing. I mean, you guys got to work on that.
Finding Nemo.
Anyway.
Finding Nemo.
So I'll send you yeah, I'll send you a Quokka mail.
A Quokka mail.
Yeah, Quokka mail. Yeah, it's going to come to you on a mail.
Well, they're only on one little island way on the west. So, yeah, they're pretty sort of restricted in their ability to move anywhere. So, but yeah, Google them. They're awesome, happy little characters.
Sounds pretty oppressive.
Well, that's how our nation started. Also, press
Quokkas. Yeah, seriously, man. Who have you not oppressed? Okay, just let's just start with that. Like, you got koalas back there. I mean, you know, you call them bears, not even really bears. I mean, what is this shit, man? Okay, get this figured out.
It's actually American.
Anywho, koala bears. Yeah, but I'm a Ukrainian Jew. Okay, so like, don't talk about being oppressed. Like, I was oppressed in several different countries, okay, and throughout history. So you can't even play that card with me.
Yeah. That's a fair call. Yeah, you got me up there.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. You can never live up to my level of my people get oppressed thing
of my oppression.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Yeah, you're. Anyway, I think I've think I talked enough shit right now. Okay.
Poor Australia.
Yeah.
Speaking of depression, I'm gonna go and cry in the back room.
Yeah. They're like, yeah, I got a quokka tied up in the back room.
Oh damn. All right, we gotta get
owes me money.
We gotta get CW going, or else Joe Arminio is gonna be pissed off that he's missing his 11 o'clock show. CW yeah, does one back to back. He does the.
We're gonna do the dev update straight after this.
Next, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right, guys. Well, easy, you know, man. One thing about like Jorginho that actually, because people see him mostly sitting down, like the first time I met him, I was kind of like, he's a big dude. Like he's almost as big as me, which was kind of like, oh, like holy shit, man. Because he came up to me like, well, he's like, hey, I'm like, what? Aren't you supposed to be not that? Like, he's a big dude. Like, holy crap, man. You're a lot bigger than I thought you were.
He's got to fight those damn bears, right, man. He's got to be big.
Yeah, so he's don't piss him well, off. He's pretty big dude, and he's probably bigger than you, and he could probably break you in half. Just, that's it.
He's 6'2 as well, isn't he?
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I think he's taller than, I mean, he's like, I'm telling you, like, he's pretty, like, bleh. Like, whoa, holy shit, yeah, man. Yeah. Don't hurt me.
You're 6'4, CW, right?
I'm 6'2.
6'2. Dan, you're almost 7. How tall are you?
6'8.
6'8. I'm 5'7. I'm 5'7½, boys.
It's okay. Hey, eat your vegetables. You'll grow.
I'm glad I didn't have to find my wife on Tinder, or else I'd be shit out of luck.
Yeah, I'm still growing, but now it's sideways.
Yeah, I'm hearing you, mate.
Oh shit. Yeah.
Horizontally, I'm still growing, but I'm a growing boy, but horizontally now.
Yeah.
All right, thanks so much, Dan. Appreciate you coming on.
Talk soon, all right, mate.
Thanks a lot, guys.
We'll try to have you again if we don't get canceled after this episode.
Oh, they can never cancel me. I'm like global warming. Whatever. I'll figure out a better analogy. Anyway, all right, guys.
Thanks.
See you, mate. Take care.
See ya.
Catch up.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, that pretty much wraps it up. That was a fun interview to do. It took a lot of editing. It went a lot longer than probably what you just saw there. So, but it was a lot of fun to do and see Dan and talk to him and get him on that personal level. CW, you want to go through what people look for this week in terms of shows?
Yes. So on, what do we have? You put me on the spot. Sundays is the weekly developer update.
And the Sigma Tuesday
and SigmaNaut meeting. Sorry, thank you for correcting me. Also on Tuesdays, this Tuesday, we're going to have another community chat. On that one, off the top of my head, it's going to be Oracle Pools and a couple other things.
Which channel?
By all means, that'll be on, we're going to hold it on Twitter and Discord. It's a lot more engagement from that front. What else do we have on Thursdays? We have the weekly AMA and developer update. Wednesday, Thursday, try and get the hash it out. We do record that on Monday night, sort of UTC morning. Once editing's done, we'll have that sort of up right away. What else do we have? Fridays, we'll try and have the Sigma update out, depending on when we can actually record and have the editing done and things like that. So there's numerous sort of things going on. We're actually creating a lot more shorts and things. So that'll be sort of released throughout the week for the AMA, the dev updates and other bits and pieces that goes on throughout the ecosystem. So by all means, check those out.
Well, let me give a shout out to Airclips, who's been really prolific in taking a lot of these YouTube AMAs and hash it outs. They haven't done a SigmaNaut update yet, though. Well, they take these short little clips of 1 to 3 minutes and put a title on them, what it's about. And it could be Joe talking about, you know, Rosen Bridge, or Dan talking about something, or Kushti talking about something, or CW. And they take that little clip, put it on YouTube, clip it out, and post it in the channel. So it's a really good thing. You can just scroll through the videos, see a topic that you like, and have a little quick digestible bit from them, which is really cool, I think.
Yeah, definitely. We've got there's hundreds of hours of content on the Ergo channel. We'll be up there, after hundreds of hours soon on the SIG update as well at some point, taking little snippets here and there, provide an insight into what the discussion actually is. And then hopefully people do want to sort of know more and actually watch the whole video. So you can have short little snippets of information and hopefully sort of drive a little bit more engagement on the other front there, and people looking at watching the whole video the video as a whole.
Yeah, great. So I think we're going to, in this, I think CW and I made a decision that we are going to, for now, push the SigmaNauts to every 2 weeks, so we can provide you with a little bit more concentrated content. If something big happens and we have it to do, then we'll come out with a surprise one in between those 2 weeks. But for now, to give you more, not watered down content, but more concentrated content, we're going to switch to every 2 weeks. Also for my sanity, probably CW's sanity as well. But we're still there. We're still going to pump these out to bring this to you.
Yeah, exactly. Very good point. Always happy to jump on at any time to discuss anything that's going on in the Ergo ecosystem. Definitely very good points there, having that sort of concentrated discussions and highlights throughout that fortnight. Having sort of dedicated time then to be able to sort of provide more in-depth information, I think it's a better use of resources on that front.
For sure.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, we hope you have a good week. Stay safe, trade smart, know your assumptions, all those taglines from Ergo. Everybody have a good one.
And ultimately have fun.
Yes. Great.
All right, guys. Take care. Thanks for watching. Have a good one.